Father James Altman has recently released another video saying Bergoglio is not the Pope. You'll recall I've reviewed a few of his other videos several months ago where he said the same thing. And he is continuing to put forward that position, really with nothing new to substantiate it, but rather a repeat of the material he has produced in the past. However, I still want to review that video. Now, some people are going to write me off before they hear anything. In fact, some already have. I notice people downvoting this video before they've even seen it, before it's even occurred, because this is a live stream. I know a lot of people have written me off because I've responded to this kind of material, and I'm telling people, some people, what they don't want to hear. I've taken a lot of heat for it, a lot of slander, a lot of false accusations have come my way. It certainly has impacted my livelihood in many ways. This is the way that I provide for my family. Unfortunately, a lot of people have just said, you know what, we don't want to have anything to do with you because you're talking about this. I was looking at my analytics not long ago, and consistently, every single day of every single week of every single month of every single year, I have lost a third of my subscribers. So, for example, if I get 100 subscribers in one day, 30 will unsubscribe. If I get 1,000 in one week, over 300 will unsubscribe, and so on. And it's usually from the videos, because it will tell you where people are unsubscribing from. It's usually from the videos where I have called out excessive radical traditionalism that is harming the body of Christ. And so, like I say, I take a lot of heat for this. And I know that some of y'all who are watching this, you might not agree with me. That's okay. That's fine. I understand. At one point in time, I didn't agree with what I'm saying right now. I was right there with Father James Altman saying the things that he was saying way before he said them. So I understand if you don't agree with me. But let me say this. 5, maybe 10 years from now, you'll look back on this and you'll appreciate that I spoke out about these things when almost nobody else is doing so. You'll at least appreciate the fact that I said something, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And if you're watching this video and you feel like, well, I really appreciate what you've been doing here at Reason and Theology, thank you so much. I ask that you pray for me in this ministry. I also ask that you hit the subscribe button. Show me your support by subscribing, because that will certainly help with the algorithm reaching more people with this content that you support. So consider doing that, as well as hitting the like button, all that good stuff. Okay, so let's go ahead and open up the video. I'm going to share my screen so that you can see it, and we're going to go through the highlights. It's about 27 minutes long. And so I'm not going to play literally all 27 minutes. However, I will play the great, you know, the greater part of it and the highlights. You'll get the substantial effect from this. So right now we're going to start around the 26 second mark. So right at the very beginning. And let me say this at the outset. Though I don't agree with Father Altman, like I said, I used to have his position way before he held this position. I used to say all of these things before he was saying them. But I no longer believe them, because I realized that I had adopted a position that was untenable in many, many ways, especially after my studies on the magisterium. But I understand why Altman is saying what he's saying. Obviously, I don't agree. But I will say this about Father Altman. Though I don't agree with him, you know what? I can actually respect the fact that he will put out his position, that he will let you know what he believes, that he will put all of his cards on the table, so to speak. Why do I appreciate that? Well, I appreciate somebody who's upfront and honest with people about what they believe. There are people I know of personally who are great influencers. I'm not going to call them out by name because that would be the sin of detraction because it's private information. But I could speak generally. I'm not going to call out who they are. But there are people who do not believe that Pope Francis is Pope, but they won't tell you that. And all of the premises that led them to that false conclusion, they will disseminate those premises, but they won't tell you that conclusion. Why? Because they know it will alienate people. They won't listen to them. They'll lose some influence. So they will put forward all of the propositions that lead to the position that Pope Francis isn't the Pope, that lead to what's called sedevacantism, that the see of St. Peter is empty. They'll put forward all those premises, but they won't draw the conclusion for you. They'll just let you draw it yourself. And some people, unfortunately, haven't connected the dots, and so they've bought into those premises that necessarily lead to sedevacantism, but they haven't connected the dots yet. And if people were more upfront and said, hey, here's why I'm a sedevacantist, and here's the premises that led me to that conclusion, people would have to rethink those premises that they've bought into and that they have not discerned as leading to sedevacantism. So whatever you may say about Father Altman, as wrong as he may be, whatever this does to his communion with the Catholic Church, whatever you may say about him, the one thing that I can respect here is that he at least says what he believes up front and publicly. He puts his cards on the table. I don't agree with what he's saying. I think it is harmful to the body of Christ. But you know what? If he's going to take that position, at least he'll tell you. I can respect that more than I can respect people who hold to these things, but don't tell you that and mislead you. So I'll give them that. Let's go ahead and begin around the 26-second mark.
That no priest, no bishop, no cardinal, and no pope can change. They cannot change the truth that if you are in mortal sin, then before receiving the Holy Eucharist, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ, you first must go to sacramental confession, period.
Okay, so let me say this. I appreciate what Father Altman is saying here. I agree with him. You know who else agrees with him? Pope Francis. Pope Francis has said explicitly that. Let me read a quote to you from Pope Francis. Quote, "We know that one who has committed a serious sin," in some translations can put it mortal sin, "should not approach Holy Communion without having first obtained absolution in the sacrament of reconciliation," end quote. Do you know when that was dated? March 14th of 2018. Do you know why that's important? Because that is 2 years after Amoris Laetitia, which is one of the documents that many people, including Father Altman, falsely will accuse Pope Francis of teaching, that you don't need to go to confession if you're in a state of mortal sin. Where I've demonstrated that that's not what Amoris Laetitia teaches. But you can even see from Pope Francis, even after the release of Amoris Laetitia, he is explicit. If you're in mortal sin, you must first go to confession before receiving communion. March 14th of 2018. When was Amoris Laetitia released? March 19th of 2016. 2 years prior, almost to the day. So what you just heard from Father Altman is a false accusation. Though it's true what he's saying about you need to go to confession if you're in mortal sin, you need to go to confession first before receiving the Eucharist, that's true. But he is saying that Pope Francis denies this. He explicitly says that in this video, that Pope Francis denies this. And this is one of the heresies, according to Altman, that has led to him no longer being the Pope. Well, unfortunately for Father Altman, Pope Francis does not put forward this false teaching. He does not put forward this heresy. He has said the exact opposite. Now, is there any interaction with that from Pope Francis? Is there any evidence that Father Altman is even aware that Pope Francis has said that. No. No. Unfortunately, there's no evidence that he's aware of it, let alone that he has interacted and accounted for it. So what you're going to hear from Father Altman over and over and over and over and over are false accusations that are unsubstantiated. And in fact, there's plenty of material out there to the contrary that Altman does not seem to be aware of. And so at the end of the day, what you're going to see, what Altman is maintaining, is effectively a house on sand, not on rock. The house collapses whenever you realize the thing is built on sand. It's built on false accusations, and the evidence is to the contrary. Let's continue where you'll continue to see these false accusations. By the way, throughout the video, you're going to hear him refer to the Council of Trent as the dogmatic Council of Trent. I don't want to quibble over words. I don't mean to sound like I'm nitpicking or being petty. But he says it so many times in a very important context that it becomes an issue. What I'm noticing from Father Altman is he doesn't seem to understand what the term dogma means. Or dogmatic. Dogma refers to primary objects of infallibility, those things that are part in sacred revelation, whether they are found in sacred scripture and or sacred tradition, that which is part of the deposit of faith, that which has been revealed by God. Now, ecumenical councils such as Trent can, and Trent did, define matters of dogma. They also defined matters that were non-dogmatic, but they're what's called secondary objects of infallibility. They also taught non-dogmatically and taught authoritatively, yet non-definitively. And the Council of Trent also imposed disciplines, which clearly are not dogmatic in nature. But I'm getting the impression over and over and over throughout this video that Altman seems to think that the Council of Trent is entirely dogmatic, and that is not the case. There are plenty of things in Trent that are disciplinary and not dogma. Why is that important? Because some things in Trent he has misunderstood, and some things in Trent are disciplinary, but he speaks of them as dogma, and that is not the case. That is where we're once again not making the proper distinctions that are necessary in these theological discussions. So a good understanding of the magisterium is necessary. It's a prerequisite to really have the conversations at the level that Father Altman wants to have them. And yet I don't see the necessary or requisite knowledge on his part of the magisterium to really have these conversations. So I do want to point that out. Right at the outset, I see problems in the way he's using terminology that is assigned to me that this is not something that he has really studied through very well. Okay, let's continue with more substantive things, however. At the 2 minute 31 second mark, we hear yet another false accusation from Father Altman. Let's watch about 45 seconds of this clip. Let me share my screen once more so that you can see it and hear it and follow along. Let's begin.
Anyone shall presume to teach, preach, or obstinately assert, or in public disputation defend the contrary, he shall be eo ipso, by the thing in and of itself, excommunicated. And for the record, dear family, get this straight. When the dogmatic Council of Trent said anyone who presumed to teach or preach otherwise than this truth shall be automatically excommunicated. And dear family, that anyone includes any priest, any bishop, any cardinal, and any pope.
All right, so the claim here is that this canon from the Council of Trent, if any pope were to violate it, they automatically are excommunicated. That is false. And what he doesn't seem to be accounting for is that in order to judge a pope of heresy, You don't have instances where it's just like something that a private individual can do. You and I can just say, well, you know, the Pope is in heresy. That's it. No. This canon is not applying to popes, since with popes, there is a unique situation. There's a long-standing Catholic tradition that the Pope is judged by no one. Now, believe me, I know the very long and complicated history of that canon. I know the forms in which it has come to us and to the present. I know the long and complicated history with conciliarism in several of our ecumenical councils, including the Sixth Ecumenical Council, including the Eighth Ecumenical Council, including Constance. Believe me, I'm aware of what these things say that touch on this question, but I'll simply say this, since I don't have enough time to reproduce a very long history and discussion of those things, which I've done elsewhere already on this channel. I'll simply say this, to indiscriminately just say, you know what, this canon applies to a pope, shows me that an individual is not really prepared to have this discussion when they just throw out that canon and think it applies to the Pope, in light of the fact that we have a very long canonical history about the Pope being judged by no one. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about papal heresy and the Pope being judged whenever Bellarmine comes up later on in this video. We'll have that discussion. But I don't see any of that or any knowledge of those discussions on Father Altman's part. He just throws it out there as if it's a given that this canon applies to a Pope. And I would contest that and say, wait, there is a long-standing tradition in Catholicism, canonical and theological, that would push back on what he just said. And he has to grapple with that. We can't just simply grant what he says. He needs to substantiate that that canon would apply. Moreover, even if it did, it still wouldn't apply to Pope Francis anyway. So it's moot at the end of the day. Even if he could prove that somehow generally, it doesn't apply to Pope Francis, because Pope Francis hasn't violated that canon anyway to begin with. Okay, let's continue here with the 4 minute and 11 second mark. And we're going to watch about 30 seconds where he is very explicit that Pope Francis is not the Pope. I want to emphasize this part. I want to show multiple places in this video where he says it, because I have done a previous video where I over and over showed that Altman said very explicitly over and over multiple times that Pope Francis isn't the Pope. And yet there were many people who came to Altman's defense. I don't know if you want to call them Altman-splainers, but they completely went against what Altman was saying, completely ignored what he was saying, and they interpreted Altman as saying, well, he's not actually saying that Pope Francis isn't the Pope, when explicitly that's what he's saying over and over and over, and that's the meaning in the context. But they're saying, no, he's just saying that Pope Francis isn't behaving the way that he should as Pope. Well, that's obviously not what he was saying in the context, but you'll see through this video, that's certainly not what he's saying here. So I don't know how anybody could continue to say that, well, Altman isn't actually saying that Pope Francis isn't the Pope. I think it's outrageously clear. Moreover, I'll point out, usually the people who are trying to defend Altman on this issue and looking for every way to avoid the inevitable conclusion that he is a set of contests, since he doesn't believe Pope Francis is the Pope and doesn't believe anyone else is, he's a set of contests. To avoid that inevitable conclusion, people will go to extremes, despite what he's saying, despite the context, despite the meaning. But I'll note that it's usually those same people who are not doing that with Pope Francis, when there's an abundance of evidence to interpret Pope Francis much more charitably than they do. So I would simply call them to consistency. All right, let's continue here. I'm going to share my screen. And like I said, we're going to start around the 4 minute and 11 second mark, where he makes it very, very clear that Bergoglio is not the Pope.
This day, we have an update on that old teaching fable, and it is called Bergoglio's New Clothes. And how? The voice of truth exposes the truth that Jorge Bergoglio is not a Pope. Now listen and understand, dear family, the simple facts that
All right. And we're going to look at those simple facts that he's going to give to us. But again, this is not the case of Altman saying that Pope Francis is just a bad pope. This is explicitly clear. He's saying he's not a pope at all. Now, it was already clear before this video, but again, for the Altman-splainers, it should be very clear to you now. And so you have to concede the inevitable conclusion that Altman is a set of occultists and all of the implications that that carries with his relationship with the Catholic Church and all of the implications that that carries with his future. Let's go to the 5 minute, 24 second mark, where not only he will say that Pope Francis isn't the Pope, he also says Pope Francis isn't even a Catholic. Okay. So not only is he not the Pope, he's just not a Catholic. Let me show you that clip.
Can Jorge Bergoglio be a Pope? No, because he is not Catholic. He is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He is a fraud, an imposter, as are every single one of the brood of vipers.
Okay, so not only is Pope Francis not the Pope, he's not a Catholic, per Altman, and it is Altman's position, according to this video and others, that the majority of bishops in the Catholic Church are also not Catholic. And I will simply ask you to carry out the logical conclusion of that position, that not only is there not a pope, but the vast majority of bishops throughout the world are not actually bishops. They're sacramentally bishops, I should say, but they're not Catholic, and therefore they're not exercising authority in the Catholic Church. So they're not functioning as bishops. I will let you draw out the implications of that set of a contest position, which I hope you'll do. But the irony here of speaking of individuals who are non-Catholic is that Canon 751 of the Code of Canon Law defines schism, which is an automatic excommunicatory offense. So like if you commit the sin of schism, you're automatically excommunicated. So per Canon 751, those who refuse to submit to the Roman pontiff or those who are in communion with him, are guilty of the sin of schism. Well, is it possible for you to submit to the Roman pontiff if you don't believe he is the Roman pontiff? No. Therefore, is sedevacantism, the false claim that there is no pope, when in fact there is then sedevacantism, the sin of schism? Yes, according to canon law, according to the way that we define schism. Is that something that results in automatic excommunication? These are things for you to consider. Okay. I want to now go to the 8 minute, 21 second mark. let me see here. Fast forward just a little bit. Okay. I'm going to share my screen. And let's resume. Okay, so in this section, he's going to talk about how Jesus warns of us of false prophets and tells us to follow the truth. and I think we can all agree, we recognize Jesus says that there are false prophets. I think we can all agree that's absolutely true. There have always been false prophets in the church, and I certainly can agree with Father Altman that we need to follow the truth. But I do want to interact with his comments on this. So let's go ahead and begin.
It's among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you. They will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the sovereign Lord who bought them, bringing swift destruction in themselves. Many will follow, watch this, many will follow their depraved conduct and will bring the way of truth into disrepute. And in 2 Timothy 4, St. Paul wrote, "For the time will come when people will not tolerate sound doctrine, but following their own desires and insatiable curiosity, will accumulate false teachers and will stop listening to the truth.
Okay. Well, we can certainly affirm those scriptures, right? But I do find it ironic that these are usually the passages that are brought up by Protestants to contest the claims of the Catholic Church. So Protestants often make this very claim against us. Well, how do we as Catholics respond to the Protestants who say, you Catholics are not following the truth? You've come up with doctrines of men. You're not holding to the truth. You have false prophets. How do we respond to the Protestants who make that same claim? Well, the response that we give to the Protestant, incidentally, is the same response that we would give to the set of Acontists, such as Father Altman. What is that response? Well, there are many of them. But I'll simply point out this, that one of the ways we recognize truth is those who are following the magisterium, which includes the papacy. So if you're deviating from the Pope and the College of Bishops in communion with him, that's one sure way you can know that you're not in the truth, that you're among those false prophets, or at least you're listening to the false prophets, that you're not holding fast to the truth, that you're not holding fast to communion with Christ. So the same answer we would give to the Protestant, you need communion with the Pope and the College of Bishops, is oddly enough the same one that we would have to give to the set of Acontists. The only difference is that a set of Acontists is going to say, well, theoretically, I accept the Pope and the College of Bishops. I just don't believe that there is a Pope right now. Or I don't even believe that the vast majority of people who are bishops out there are actually part of the College of Bishops. To which I would point out that the perfect way to respond to this error of set of Acontism is the concept of universal and peaceful acceptance of a papacy. If there has been universal and peaceful acceptance of a pope at the time of his elevation, then regardless of whether or not the canons were followed, and in this case they were followed when he was elected, notwithstanding the claims to the contrary, which I've dealt with on this channel, but even if they weren't, the concept of universal and peaceful acceptance heals in the root, it sanates, it fixes any kind of problems with the Pope being illicitly elected. In other words, when we look at Pope Francis's election, not only was it canonical, again, despite what some people will tell you, not only was it canonical, but even if it wasn't, he did have universal and peaceful acceptance at the time of his election. At that time, there was universal and peaceful acceptance. And so, whether you like it or not, he's the Pope. And so you can't say, well, I accept the papacy in theory, or I accept the College of Bishops in theory, and that's how I'm not a Protestant. I just don't accept that Pope Francis is a pope. I believe he's an anti-pope. Well, the facts indicate that Pope Francis actually is a pope. So you can't use the anti-pope card here. That does not work in this case. There's also other reasons why the anti-pope claim doesn't work. That's just one quick one that I'll point you to. I'll also point you to the fact that there's an important thing that Pastor Eternus says here about the papacy. One of its functions is to be a principle of unity, to safeguard the faith, and to prevent schisms. And when you no longer have the papacy, such as Father Altman, you're going to end up into all kinds of problems and all kinds of errors. So theoretically, I agree with Father Altman. Yes, stay away from false prophets and embrace the truth. But how do you do that? Well, you attach yourself to the Catholic Church that Christ established. How do you identify that Catholic Church? Well, one of the ways that we identify it, contrary to the Protestants who see an invisible church and have a remnant of faithful, one of the ways that we Catholics have historically identified it is, well, you surround yourself with the Roman pontiff and those who are in communion with him. And here's something from the First Vatican Council Pastor Eternus. It says, for the Holy Spirit was promised to the successors of Peter, not so that they might by his revelation make some known some new doctrine, but that by his assistance they might religiously guard and faithfully expound the revelation or deposit of faith transmitted by the apostles. Indeed, their apostolic teaching was embraced by all the venerable fathers and reverenced and followed by all the holy Orthodox doctors, for they knew very well that the See of St. Peter remains unblemished by any error. Where's that coming from? That's coming from the Sixth Ecumenical Council, from Agatho's letter to the emperor, read at the council, accepted by the fathers in the East, which is why I say the Eastern Orthodox, in one of their ecumenical councils, among others, have accepted the papal claims. So they have an internal contradiction here. But it always remains unblemished by any error. And I would have to point out, I'm not exactly sure Altman really believes that. Again, he's either going to have to say, well, the see has been blemished, because he has all these long lists of grievances with Pope Francis. Or he's going to have to say, well, you know, just the whole thing is false and he's just an anti-pope. But then the evidence to the contrary is overwhelming. And so that is just absolutely not an acceptable position. It's very clear that Pope Francis is not an anti-pope. So if we're going to embrace the Catholic faith, we have to embrace that Pope Francis is the pope and the See of St. Peter remains unblemished by any error. It continues, in accordance with the divine promise of our Lord and Savior to the prince of the his disciples. So this is based on the divine promise of Jesus. I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. When you have turned again, strengthen your brethren. Pastor Eternus also says this: this gift of truth and never failing faith was therefore divinely conferred on Peter and his successors in this see, so that they might discharge their exalted office for the salvation of all, and so that the whole flock of Christ might be kept away by them from the poisonous food of error and be nourished with the sustenance of heavenly doctrine. Do you really believe that about the papacy? Or are you one of those who says, well, Pope Francis is the pope, but he's at war against tradition? Well, you're violating what the First Vatican Council says. You would actually be more consistent to just say, well, Pope Francis isn't the pope, like Altman has done here. However, he runs into other problems elsewhere, as I've noted. Universal and peaceful acceptance. It continues, thus the tendency to schism is removed, and the whole church is preserved in unity, and resting on its foundation can stand firm against the gates of hell. So how do you know where the false prophets are, and how do you know where the truth is? According to the First Vatican Council, the papacy, and the College of Bishops. But you have a problem if you're going to go the set of a contest route. Because they're going to say, well, I don't run into this issue because I don't believe Pope Francis is the pope, and so thus he hasn't blemished the See of St. Peter. Here's your problem. He also doesn't believe that the vast majority of bishops out there are able to lawfully exercise authority. Same for cardinals. How is he ever going to recover, that is, Altman and other set of contests, how is he ever going to recover from that position? Who is going to elect the next pope? Where are the faithful bishops? Who are they going to be ordained by? The heretics? If he believes there's maybe one or two faithful bishops out there, maybe one or two cardinals out there, well, when those do not create an entire college of bishops and they do not elect a new pope, what are you going to do? This is why sedevacantism, starting around in the 70s, is when it was created. This is why it has lasted until today. They don't have a way to get out of this predicament because they don't have a college of bishops. They want to say the vast majority of people who are ordained are invalidly ordained. I don't know if Altman has gone that far yet, but he certainly would say they're not exercising lawful authority. And the vast majority of cardinals have also fallen from the faith, so they don't exercise office. So where are you going to get your pope from? Where are you going to get your college of bishops from? Certainly not from the college of cardinals that we currently have. Because what's going to happen is in the next papal conclave, those cardinals are going to elect a successor. And guess what that successor is going to do? He's going to confirm Pope Francis in his papacy. What is Altman going to do at that point? He's going to say, well, this guy is also not the pope. He's also an anti-pope. And what happens when that person's successor then confirms the next person who's going to be Pope and Pope Francis's magisterium? Well, he's going to say, well, that guy also is an anti-Pope. You see why sedevacantism has continued to this day? It's a never-ending error. There is no way out of it unless you just say, you know what? I've backed myself into an absurd position that is incoherent. It's internally inconsistent. I've backed myself into a position that is untenable. Either I need to go to the Eastern Orthodox, which many do, or I need to go to the Protestants, which some do, or I need to go to Islam, which some do, or I need to go to atheism, which some do. Or what I would recommend, retrace your steps. The false premises that led you to this false conclusion of sedevacantism, rethink those. Retrace your steps. Because there were some faulty moves that you made that led you to this that you need to retrace. And it won't require you to abandon Catholicism or the papacy. It will just require you to admit you were wrong and retrace your steps. Okay, let's go to the next part. This is going to be the 11 minute 23 second mark. Oh, I do want to say one other thing. The video clip that we just saw. One of the things that Altman focused a lot on was, well, Jesus says, you'll know them by their fruit, false prophets. Mm-hmm. He says that, and I agree, you'll know them by their fruit. But I hear this being used all the time in a way that, in fact, abuses the words of our Lord. It can actually be used against the Catholic Church. Let me show you how. Father Altman will say, well, you'll know them by their fruit, false prophets. And look at all of the fruit of Bergoglio. It's terrible. It's rotten. Look at all the fruit of these bishops. It's terrible. It's rotten. Okay. Well, you know what? I recall that there's a lot of Eastern Orthodox that I've spoken to many times who will say the exact same thing. And you know what they'll also say? They'll say, look at Pope Francis. Bad fruit. Look at the College of Bishops. Bad fruit. Look at the Catholic Church. Bad fruit. Look at all the scandals. Bad fruit. Sex abuse scandal. Bad fruit. And they'll say, and look at our bishops. Look at our liturgy. Look at what we're doing. We're celebrating a wonderful divine liturgy and we're preserving the faith and tradition. Now, I personally think that the Orthodox in many cases are misrepresenting their position, but a lot of people are going to say, yeah, I see a lot of great fruit with the Orthodox. They haven't just gutted their liturgy and abandoned their liturgy, and they're not just changing the faith, and their bishops aren't saying this and that and trying to bless this and that. And so look at all the good fruit the Orthodox are producing, and look at all the bad fruit the Catholics are producing. You see how this argument that Father Altman is using to substantiate his position actually serves to undermine the Catholic position. The Orthodox is just simply going to say, look at all the bad fruit. And therefore, it's absurd to continue to maintain the papacy. We've been saying all along the papacy has been in heresy. So come home to Orthodoxy, brother. They're waiting for you. They will welcome you. And unfortunately, many fall for that. And they embrace Orthodoxy. And then they find out the grass isn't greener on the other side. And they become disheartened. And then at that point, they start to reconsider Christianity altogether in some cases, which is unfortunate. Okay, so I'm not impressed when somebody brings up the good fruit, bad fruit thing, because I've seen this thing go a million and one ways. And it often undermines what the person is actually trying to promote. So let's move on to the next section here, the 11 minute, 23 second mark. Let me share my screen. Okay. Here we go.
We actually do not have to do anything about them, these false shepherds, because as the dogmatic Council of Trent has handed down to us, they already have automatically excommunicated themselves. So, dear family, it's time now to summarize Jorge Bergoglio's new clothes. Whereupon we can conclude, as we should, he is not the Pope. From the moment.
Okay. Well, again, I don't know how Altman-splainers will explain this one. It's very clear he's a set of Acontes. But not only is he saying, again, Pope Francis isn't the Pope, you'll notice there, he's also implicating the vast majority of Catholic bishops. And so what he's effectively saying is not only is there not a Pope, but the vast majority of people who are sacramentally ordained as bishops do not exercise lawful authority in the Catholic Church because they're not Catholic. And by the way, they'll often point to Mediator Dei. I'm sorry, not Mediator Dei. Satis Cognitum, if I recall correctly. I believe by Leo XIII. They'll often completely rip him out of context and they'll say, see, a non-Catholic cannot exercise lawfully authority in the church. And they'll say, well, these bishops are not Catholic, therefore they do not exercise authority in the Catholic Church. So what you're seeing here is Father Altman embracing a very strong form of set of Acontism that not only says Pope Francis isn't the Pope, but also says the vast majority of bishops in the world are not exercising lawful authority because they're not even Catholic. So they're not even in the Catholic Church. So they can't even elect a successor. And they can't even continue the College of Bishops. Which leads you to the absurd position because you have to effectively say, look, you're telling me that there's probably like one or two bishops and one or two cardinals that are legit at this point. Good luck with recovering from that position. Not only would the Catholic manualists have condemned that proposition and would have said that you would never have the College of Bishops that thin, I would say that you've just practically adopted a position that you could never really recover from. You're never going to recreate a College of Bishops or Cardinals unless you kind of go the really wild route that a handful of set of Acontes went a few decades ago. Like six or seven of them came together and elected Pope Michael, the new Pope. And they weren't even bishops, right? They were just laity. This is how the Pope Michael thing started, from the stuff that Altman is buying into here. I can only imagine where Altman is going to end up in maybe 5 years of trying to carry this stuff out to its logical conclusion. This is how you got some of those conclavist set of Acontes who elected an anti-pope. By the way, there is a Pope Michael II, because Pope Michael did die, unfortunately, a few years ago. God rest his soul. Feel bad for the guy. I hope he was reconciled to the church before his death. But they did elect a new successor, Pope Michael II. I kid you not. And that kind of pretty extreme fringe group that gave us Pope Michael is effectively what we're seeing Father Altman fall into here with this radical position. Let's go to the 14-minute, 1-second mark, where we get another false accusation that has been addressed ad nauseum. And yet he's going to bring it up again. Let me share my screen. Okay, let's continue.
From the moment Bergoglio had his bishop buddies bring the pagan fertility goddess, the Pachamama, into St. Peter's and set it down in front of the altar and then held a worship service in the garden.
He says, Altman is saying, from this moment, Pope Francis lost the papacy. He also mentions a bunch of other moments in which he had lost the papacy, which is contradictory chronologically. I'll leave it to you to figure that one out. But let me just deal with this issue. So we've heard this a million times now. Thank God for Father Deacon Dragani, among others, who has spoken up and walked through the ceremony that he's referring to in the Vatican Gardens, walked through it play by play, and explained the people who were there, what they were doing, what was going on. I'll put a link to that in the show notes if you haven't seen it. But the truth is, not only was there no idolatry in that ceremony, it wasn't even Pachamama. That's the mic drop moment. It wasn't even Pachamama. And now I know Pope Francis later on speaks of it as such. Believe me, we addressed that in the video. But it wasn't even Pachamama. That's the incredible thing here. You know where the claim that this was Pachamama came from? We actually know who it came from. Very popular YouTuber conspired with several individuals to create an artificial controversy surrounding this question. And admittedly, they at first actually believed the truth, which is that it was the Virgin Mary being depicted, not Pachamama. They actually believed that at first. But they then abandoned that position and then embraced the false claim that this was Pachamama and went on a campaign to slander the Holy Father and conspired and did all kinds of wild stuff to bear that out, causing profound scandal. Whatever scandal you might say the ceremony caused by Pope Francis, they caused 1,000 more times scandal and heightened it by 1,000 times more by what they did. Well, I've addressed this in other videos, so I won't recreate that here, but I'll just simply point out that the Pachamama thing has ran out of gas. I criticize it. I still criticize it. I criticize it in the video where I have Father Deacon Dragani on, who shows that it wasn't Pachamama. But I still criticize it, and you'll see why. So I think it's legitimate to criticize some aspects of it. But make sure that you have your facts straight when you criticize it. Criticize it for what it should be criticized for, not for false accusations that it was Pachamama or that there was idolatry. Many Protestants were scandalized by the claim that the Pope was worshiping an idol. Many, many Orthodox were scandalized by the same. I had an Orthodox priest who told me point blank he cannot take the Catholic claim seriously. And to this day, he doesn't. Every time I see him, doesn't take it seriously. You know why? Because he watched a Catholic YouTuber who insists. And by the way, it was this Catholic YouTuber who was behind this whole conspiracy and controversy. He says he watches this Catholic YouTuber, and it's very clear the Pope worships a pagan idol, and the Pope is the Antichrist. And I thought, well, I have my work cut out for me trying to explain the truth to him when I have other Catholics telling him differently. It has scandalized many, many people. So whatever scandal the ceremony itself has caused, we have caused a great more scandal by perpetuating this lie. And that's what it is. It's a lie and it's slander. Again, don't take my word for it. I'm going to put a link to the video in the show notes. I encourage you to go and watch it. Prove us wrong. We walk you through play by play of the entire ceremony. And we tell you who was there, what they're doing. We explain it to you. And we demonstrate the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good that's there, the bad that's there. But we also demonstrate it wasn't even Pachamama. And thus there was no idolatry. So it's time for us to let this lie go. It's time for us to put this thing to bed, put it to rest. Unfortunately, now we're seeing it being used by individuals such as Father Altman to substantiate Sedevacantism, to support Sedevacantism. Because keep in mind, at the end of the video, Altman is going to say, I've listed 20 heresies for you that shows you Pope Francis isn't the Pope, one of which is the Pachamama claim. So this is one of the false accusations that bolsters his false claim that Pope Francis isn't the Pope. So if it is a lie, and his house ultimately rests on lies and false accusations that are not true, then obviously his conclusion is also false. It's a house built on sand. Okay, let me go to the 15-minute, 12-second mark. There we go. Sharing my screen.
Never been born. From the moment, Bergoglio had five meetings with an avowed atheist who reported that Bergoglio said, those people who do not repent and therefore cannot be forgiven just disappear after death because hell does not exist. Rather, the disappearance of sinful souls exists. I guess they just go poof into nothingness. A statement that Bergoglio, in typical Bergoglian modus operandi, never expressly denied nor corrected by teaching the truth.
Okay. So the claim here is that Pope Francis denies hell in his interview with Scalfari, which the Vatican had already responded to, but I'll simply point out this. Altman doesn't seem to be aware of and has not accounted for the many instances where Pope Francis affirms hell. So I'm seeing an inconsistency here. I'm hearing that in the Scalfari interview, that Pope Francis allegedly denied the existence of hell. And you just heard that repeated by Father Altman. And yet, for years now, we have numerous quotes of Pope Francis saying otherwise. Let me read to you just a few. 2016 in Lent. The danger always remains that by a constant refusal to open the doors of their hearts to Christ who knocks on them in the poor, the proud, the rich, and powerful will end up condemning themselves and plunging into the eternal abyss of solitude, which is hell, end quote. That is Pope Francis. Eternal hell. But according to Father Altman, it's an open and shut case. Pope Francis denies hell. And yet, there's no real quote that he can point to. He says, well, Scalfari says this, right? And Scalfari does not take notes, as the Vatican has pointed out, does not actually have direct quotes of him. But I do have direct quotes of Pope Francis affirming hell and affirming its eternality. I just read one to you. But again, he thinks it's an open and shut case. And he doesn't seem to be aware that there's this other material that contradicts what he's saying, and he doesn't grapple with it and explain it. Now, I can explain the Scalfari issue. Obviously, he misunderstood something. He's 90-something years old at the time, doesn't record things. Clearly, he misunderstood something. And I know that with moral certitude, because multiple other direct quotes that we can verify from Pope Francis say the exact opposite. I'll read another one to you. 2014, Pope Francis says to the Mafia, quote, there is still time to avoid ending up in hell. That is what is waiting for you if you continue on this path, end quote. He explicitly affirms hell. Another one from 2016, quote, we are therefore faced with a real and true call from the Lord to think seriously about the end, about my end, the judgment, about my judgment. In this regard, the Pope recalled how when we are children, we go to catechism class and are taught four things, death, judgment, hell, and glory. I'm sorry, some of this is quoted and then some of it is narrative. The four things, death, hell, judgment, and glory is a direct quote. Of course, some might say, quote, Father, this frightens us. However, Francis replied, it's the truth. So what's the truth? Death, judgment, hell, glory. It's the truth, he says. This is a direct quote. Because if you do not take care of your heart, you always live far away from the Lord. Perhaps there is the danger of continuing in this way, far away from the Lord for eternity. This is very bad, end quote. So you have, again, three direct quotes from Pope Francis, affirming hell and even its eternality. Over and against what Pope Francis allegedly said in an interview that I can't verify and that the Vatican has denied. Now, you might still insist, well, I think that that Scalfari interview is authentic. Okay, put forward your argument. And please explain to me how you think that evidence overturns what I can verify, and that is direct quotes that I just gave you, among others. At least grapple with the evidence to the contrary. Otherwise, you're going to show yourself to be dishonest and unfair and lacking sincerity in analyzing Pope Francis. Okay, so let's go on to the 15-minute 46-second mark. Which I think we're effectively already at. So we'll just continue with where we are. Okay. Here we go.
From the moment Bergoglio signed the Abu Dhabi Agreement, destroying the fundamental and irreconcilable distinction between the Catholic Church and everyone else, and then dared to say that God willed a plurality of religions, even though Jesus crucified in Matthew 28, gave the apostles the marching orders to convert the world to the one holy Catholic and apostolic church.
Okay, so this is, again, one of the false accusations upon which he bases his claim that Pope Francis isn't the Pope. And he points to the Abu Dhabi statement, and he says that he's denying that salvation is in Jesus alone and is affirming that God wills a diversity of religions, and therefore there's multiple paths to heaven, and that's then denying the Great Commission and so on. Well, you'll note he does not grapple with the fact that Pope Francis has already clarified this. And he has clarified that the document, when it speaks of God willing the diversity of religions, he's referring to the permissive will of God. In the same way that we can say God does not will sin, that is in his antecedent will, but we can also say God will sin in his consequent will. That's what Pope Francis is referring to. That's the distinction when he speaks of permissive will. In his antecedent will, God does not will the diversity of religions. However, due to sin, he allows for it in his permissive will to bring about a greater good. That's why he allows Satan to do what he does, sin to happen, to bring about a greater good. Pope Francis already clarified he was speaking of the permissive will of God, which is entirely theologically sound. There's no way to deny that. Pope Francis has already said that. Did Father Altman acknowledge that? No. Did Father Altman grapple with that and explain that? No. He just throws the accusation out, which has been responded to and overturned numerous times already. And yet these false accusations, you'll notice, continue to be trotted out by dissenters, and they continue to repeat them despite the evidence to the contrary. And again, they don't grapple with the evidence to the contrary, which in my opinion makes us have to start to question people's sincerity when they do this. Number two, I'll point out there are numerous instances where Pope Francis calls for us to evangelize people. I'll distinguish that from proselytism. I have many videos distinguishing how he defines those terms. Evangelism, yes. Proselytism, no. Evangelism, in his mind, is go and share the good news of Jesus with people. That Jesus is the way, the truth, and life, and the only way to salvation. That's evangelism. He affirms that. Proselytism, he denies and he rejects. What is proselytism? He compares it to those TV preachers who are trying to take people's money and coerce them into giving them money for the exchange of God's grace, or using undue pressure and illicit means to get people to convert. If you convert, I will give you this, I will give you that. That's wrong. That is what he's referring to as proselytism. And again, I have multiple videos bearing that out in context. But you don't even have to go through that to just simply see that Pope Francis does affirm salvation is in Christ alone. He has multiple homilies explicitly saying that, and he upholds the Great Commission. I'm going to read to you from Evangelii Gaudium, paragraphs 14 through 15. Altman just presented Pope Francis as denying the Great Commission, and yet Pope Francis actually affirms it. And he puts it into practice. I've seen homilies of his where he is evangelizing people and does this. Go and read his World Youth Day sermon in Rio de Janeiro. You'll see a perfect example of that. But here in his Magisterium, he says, lastly, we cannot forget that evangelism is first and foremost about preaching the gospel to those who do not know Jesus Christ, or who have always rejected him. Many of them are quietly seeking God, led by yearning to see his face, even in the countries of ancient Christian tradition. All of them have a right to receive the gospel. That's a mic drop moment. They have a right to receive the gospel. Christians have the duty to proclaim the gospel, so it's not an option. According to Pope Francis, it's not an option for you to share the gospel. It's a duty, without excluding anyone. Instead of seeming to impose new obligations, they should appear as people who wish to share their joy, who point to a horizon of beauty, and who invite others to a delicious banquet. It is not by proselytizing that the church grows, but by attraction. John Paul II asks us to recognize that there must be no lessening of the impetus to preach the gospel to those who are far from Christ, because this is the first task of the church. Pope Francis is explicitly agreeing with John Paul II, saying this is the first task of the church and it should not be lessened. And yes, elsewhere, Pope Francis does say it's not just attraction with somehow your behavior. He makes it explicitly clear it's also by word. In fact, in this document, he makes it clear it's also by word, by the proclamation of the gospel, and by your life. It's both. Both are forms of attraction. So Pope Francis, for him, it's a both and. Indeed, today's missionary activity still represents the great challenge for the church, and the missionary task must remain foremost. What would happen if we were to take these words seriously? We would realize that the missionary outreach is paradigmatic for all the church's activity along these lines. The Latin America bishop stated that we cannot passively and calmly wait in our church buildings. We need to move from a pastoral ministry of mere conservation to a decidedly missionary pastoral ministry. This task continues to be a source of immense joy for the church. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than 99 righteous persons who need no repentance, end quote. This is just one example. I can give you many others from Pope Francis. Why aren't those addressed? Why isn't at least one of them addressed by Father Altman? Just one of those overturns his argument. How much more of the multitude and abundance of things Pope Francis has said and done overturns what Altman is saying here. Again, a house built on sand. Because he uses all of these false accusations to substantiate the false claim that Pope Francis isn't the Pope. We're seeing it's a house built on sand. Let's continue. We're going to go to the 18-minute mark. We're going to hear one that continues to come up constantly. I hear this trotted out nonstop, and everybody who presents it in the exact same way. It's like they're all listening to each other and all repeating each other and not listening to anyone else who opposes what they're saying. So they're not listening to the contrary voices. They're just all listening to each other in an echo chamber, and they all keep repeating the same false claims. Instead of discerning and questioning whether or not what they're saying is true. Here's a claim about Pope Francis refusing to meet with Cardinal Zinn, whom I've interviewed on this show before. Let me share my screen, and let's hear what he has to say about Pope Francis and Cardinal Zinn.
Even as Bergoglio couldn't seem to find time to meet with Cardinal Joseph Zinn, who was under attack from the Chinese communist government.
Mm-hmm. How many times have we heard that? That Pope Francis has time to meet with this or that heretic or with this or that sinner, but he doesn't have time to meet with Cardinal Zinn. Well, I'll say that argument sounds suspiciously like what the Pharisees accused Jesus of, with Jesus hanging out with sinners. Just putting that one out there. It sounds suspiciously similar. But aside from the similarities there, this is just simply not true. Pope Francis has met with Cardinal Zinn multiple times, and in fact met with him recently. Met with him in January 6, 2023. People were saying over and over and over, he's not meeting with Cardinal Zinn, and yet he met with Cardinal Zinn. Met with him. And then all those people who were saying Pope Francis refused to meet with Cardinal Zinn, when he met with him January, did you hear any of them come on YouTube and say, oh, I think I may have misjudged him? He met with him. Did any of them correct that? Nope. But they did continue to bring up that false accusation, despite the evidence. Not only that, here's what makes it even more interesting. not only did Pope Francis meet with Cardinal Zinn, but Cardinal Zinn himself says it was a very productive conversation. He was very happy about it. Quote, this is from Cardinal Zinn, quote, it was wonderful. He was so very warm, end quote. So not only did he meet with him, Cardinal Zinn was very happy with the conversation and the results and had nothing but good to say about Pope Francis. But the accusers, the accuser of the brethren, they don't seem to want to come out and set the record straight and say, okay, maybe we misjudged them. We jumped the gun. No. Instead, we just continue to repeat the same false claims over and over, thus making ourselves resemble the accuser of the brethren more than he who is the way, the truth, and the life. Let's go on to the 19:38 mark. And here, he is going to talk about the Archbishop Fernandez, soon to be Cardinal, and his appointment to the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith. Let's continue.
Bergoglio recently appointed an absolute heretic, Archbishop Victor Fernandez, as head, I'll wait for it, as head of the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith, whose previous doctrinal errors earned him a red flag file in Rome, and whose bad record on disciplining priests accused of sexual abuse earned him a red flag in Rome.
Oh. And for Altman in the video, this is probably the biggest thing for him that just undermines Pope Francis. And again, this is one of his reasons for saying Pope Francis isn't the Pope, because of this appointment. Well, I've addressed the issue of Archbishop Fernandez in multiple videos, so I won't reproduce those here. You're welcome to go and watch them. I'll just simply recap that there are some things that I think he's misrepresented on, and there are some things that we can legitimately say, yeah, we got to work on that. With all due respect, we got to work on that one. So I have some criticisms of Fernandez, respectful criticisms, but I also recognize that people are bringing up all kinds of stuff that really doesn't actually apply if you just listen to what he was saying. So there's some good and there's some bad here. I'll leave it to you to go and watch them. But let's cut to the chase, right? He wants to say this appointment, because he believes Fernandez is a heretic, this appointment shows that Pope Francis's papacy is invalid. Let's just concede the premise for the moment that, you know, the Pope appointing him as head of the CDF and he's a heretic, that's just evidence this can't be the Pope. I just want you, even though I don't grant the premise, I want you to just say hypothetically, okay, I'll play ball. Are you really being consistent right now? I don't think so. Because you don't do that with Pope Pius IX in the First Vatican Council. You don't do that. Oddly enough, for better or worse, Pope Pius IX did rehabilitate a heretic, a known heretic, who was condemned by Rome as a heretic. And not only did he rehabilitate him, and he was justly condemned as a heretic. So it's not like he was misunderstood. He was a heretic. He did do wrong. He was justly condemned. Pope Pius IX rehabilitates him. He plays a key role at the First Vatican Council, so one of our ecumenical councils. And we don't throw out Vatican I, do we? And we don't say Pope Pius IX is an antipope. Not only that, he was the one who authored the first draft of Eterni Patris, the encyclical Eterni Patris. Yep. Yep. Wonderful, great, great encyclical, Eterni Patris. Not only that, but his theology, his ecclesiology, we still stand by to this day, this theologian, this condemned theologian, condemned as a heretic. Do y'all know who I'm talking about? Joseph Kligan. He was condemned as a heretic. Not for what you think, not for his ecclesiology. He was spot on with his ecclesiology, and Pope Pius IX realizes that and uses him in his ecclesiology, even though he was condemned for heresy elsewhere. Well, I've done videos about this, but long story short, Joseph Kloygen, despite listening to Rome's warnings about a particular convent, there was this convent that was claiming to have a holy woman there. It was started by an alleged holy woman. And Rome said, no, there's issues with the lady who founded this convent and this order. And no, we have problems here. You shouldn't be calling her a saint, but they would still call her a saint. Instead of listening to Rome, they still affirmed her as a saint, and then they followed in her footsteps with all kinds of wacky practices. And unfortunately, Kloygen was assigned to the convent as a priest confessor, where with the mother superior, he began to have an affair. The mother superior was into all kinds of wild stuff, not only including major sexual sins, obviously, but also murders were involved here. Kloygen himself, there are questions on whether or not he was involved in the poisoning of a princess who came to join the order but was scandalized by it and left. There are questions on whether or not he was part of the murder. There was no resolution there. However, he was condemned as a heretic because he was defending the wild stuff from this mother superior, who was claiming to have revelations from God and claiming to speak to the Virgin Mary, all the while sleeping around with him and, you know, murdering people and stuff like that. Well, this was known. This was known in Rome. Yeah, even though he was condemned as a heretic, Pope Pius IX rehabilitates him, and he plays a very pivotal part for Vatican I and one of our encyclicals and a lot of our ecclesiology. So let's just be consistent here. If you're going to say, well, look, this issue with Fernandez, oh, I think he's a heretic. Oh, well, this means that Pope Francis can't be the Pope because of this appointment. Where does that put you with Vatican I? Are you going to deny papal infallibility now? I imagine there's going to be a lot of Eastern Orthodox who are going to exploit that and say, well, yeah, well, that argument sounds great. And so that's why you shouldn't accept papal infallibility in Vatican I. And come home to Eastern Orthodoxy, brother. You're ripe for the picking when you go down this road. If you're just consistent, you're ripe for the picking. So it's a really bad and inconsistent argument, even if the premise were true. And the premise itself isn't even true. That's the problem. Much more can be said there, but I'll leave it there. Let's go to the 21 minute, 12 second timestamp where he's going to once again misrepresent Robert Bellarmine, who is not on the side of Father Altman on this issue, but he presents him as if he is. Let's see. Share my screen. All right, let's go.
So has in more ways than we can count, but particularly through his sacrilege against the Holy Eucharist, excommunicated himself automatically from the Catholic Church.
He's saying Pope Francis automatically excommunicated himself from the Catholic Church.
Again, as always, don't take my word for it. Cardinal St. Robert Bellarmine, Doctor of the Church, wrote, "For men are not bound or able to read hearts, but when they see that someone is a heretic by his external works, they judge him to be a heretic, pure and simple, and condemn him as a heretic."
Okay, so he cites Bellarmine as if he is on his side here. Let me say this. If you look at Bellarmine explicitly believes that no pope has ever been or could ever be a heretic. So he's not only saying that they can't teach heresy, he doesn't even believe that they could be a formal heretic. Bellarmine doesn't believe that. He believes they cannot be a heretic at all. That's Bellarmine's position. So what you just heard here is Altman is saying, let me just cite Bellarmine, Doctor of the Church, saint, cardinal, as if that makes him somehow authoritative on this matter, because it certainly doesn't make him authoritative over the magisterium. But he somehow cites him as if he's authoritative, and yet he doesn't actually accept what Bellarmine believes. So even if somehow Bellarmine were authoritative here, which he's not because he doesn't override the magisterium, but even if he did and was authoritative, it would entirely undermine Altman's position. Because he would say the Pope can't be a heretic. Altman's position, in several instances, is that Pope Francis lost the papacy because of this or this and this or that heresy. Bellarmine says that's impossible. So Altman presents Bellarmine, but doesn't actually believe Bellarmine. Now, I think that's because Altman doesn't actually know Bellarmine's position. What happens with Set of Acontis is that they'll often quote a few portions of Bellarmine, but they're not very familiar with the rest of him and what he says that contradicts what they're saying. So it's kind of selective quotes. It's kind of like what Protestants do with the Bible against Catholics all the time. That's what your Set of Acontis, like Father Altman, are doing with Bellarmine. They just rip Bellarmine out of context and ignore the more substantive things that Bellarmine says that completely contradicts what they're saying. He does not believe any pope not only could teach heresy, he doesn't even believe they could be a formal heretic. That directly undercuts what Altman is saying here. Let's go to the 24-minute mark, where Altman is going to assure his viewers that they are not schismatics, and he is not schismatic. And I'll just ask you, does this sound familiar to you? Because it should. It reminds me of a young Martin Luther. Full of passion, full of zeal, much like Father Altman. A young Luther who recognized abuses in the Catholic Church and rightly called them out, but also went way too far and ended up embracing errors and ended up separating himself from the Catholic Church. A young Luther, full of zeal, had some good points, but then went way too far and ended up leaving the Catholic Church and doing a tremendous amount of damage, but then assures his flock that they're not schismatic. Luther assured his flock, I'm not schismatic. You're not schismatic. It's the Pope who's a schismatic. It's the Pope who has abandoned the gospel. We hold the true faith. The Pope doesn't. I'm going to ask you, in light of that, say, does this seem maybe a little similar to what we're going to see here? Does this sound familiar? Well, it should. Let's watch it.
Understand, dear family, we are not the schismatics when we hold fast to the deposit of faith. By holding fast to the unchanged and unchangeable truth, rather, it is Bergoglio and his buddies, his BFFs, who are the schismatics, who have schismed far from the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. They are the schismatics, dear family, not us.
Okay, but that's obviously contrary to the Code of Canon Law, which defines schism as those who refuse to submit to the Roman Pontiff. Obviously, we're operating with a faulty definition of schism here, one that I've heard multiple clerics, even bishops recently, erroneously espouse, a false definition of schism. And they use that to substantiate their dissent against Pope Francis. So, in fact, they are behaving in a very schismatic way, but they have to kind of defend themselves in some way. So they just say, no, actually, it's you guys who are the schismatics. When has it ever worked out well for somebody to dissent against the Holy See and to say, no, it's the Holy See that's in schism, not me? When has that ever worked out in church history for the person who makes that accusation? Never. It always works out against them. They always end up being the one in the wrong, and the papacy was the one in the right every single time. This, again, reminds me of a young Martin Luther, full of passion, full of zeal, but incredibly misguided. Sees some problems, rightly points them out, but then goes way too far with it. Finds himself in a position where he's no longer in the Catholic Church. And then in order to justify it, says, nope, it's not me who's not in the Catholic Church. It's not me who's excommunicated. It's not me who's a schismatic. You guys are the schismatics. You're in schism. It's Luther all over again. Let's go to the 25 minute, 20 second mark, where he continues with Bellarmine and completely misunderstands Bellarmine, which I'll demonstrate.
And I quote, Church wrote, and I quote, a pope, manifestly a heretic, ceases in himself to be pope and head in the same way he ceases to be a Christian and a member of the body of the church. And for this reason, can be judged and punished by the church. But don't hold your breath waiting for any of the 99 vipers Bergoglio has named as a cardinal.
All right. Well, how many times have we heard this from the set of Acontis? For decades now, we've heard them quote this from Bellarmine, and in every single instance, they never, not once, actually define for you what Bellarmine means by manifest heretic. Again, he just said, hey, Bellarmine says manifest heretic, automatically excommunicated. They're sidestepping the fact that Bellarmine doesn't believe a pope will ever be in this situation. They're sidestepping that. That's number one. But number two, then Bellarmine is just theoretically saying, well, if you could have a heretical pope, which he doesn't believe he can, but if you could, he takes the position that if they're a manifest heretic, they're automatically deposed because they're automatically excommunicated. Well, what does he mean by manifest heretic? Altman just takes it for granted. It just means, well, a guy that you just clearly know is a heretic. That's not how Bellarmine defines manifest heresy. Let me read to you how he defines manifest heresy. In response to the fourth opinion on papal heresy, Bellarmine says, quote, for in the first place, it is proven with arguments from authority and from reason that the manifest heretic is ipso facto deposed. The argument from authority is based on St. Paul, Titus 3, who orders that the heretic be avoided after two warnings. That is, after showing himself to be manifestly obstinate, which means before any excommunication or judicial sentence, end quote. So he defines manifest heresy as someone who has been rebuked twice per the admonition of St. Paul to Titus. Has Pope Francis, either by the College of Cardinals or an imperfect ecumenical council, been rebuked twice? No. Neither the College of Bishops nor the College of Cardinals has rebuked him twice for an instance of heresy. Has not happened. So even if Pope Francis were guilty of saying something heretical, he has not been rebuked twice. So even according to Bellarmine's paradigm, which again, Bellarmine doesn't even believe this is going to happen, but if somehow it did, theoretically, he has to be warned twice by the College of Bishops and or the College of Cardinals. And that hasn't happened with Pope Francis. So even if Pope Francis has said or taught something heretical, which he has not, but even if he did, he hasn't been warned twice and thus shown himself manifestly obstinate. So per Bellarmine's view here, which he doesn't even take, because again, he doesn't believe a pope could ever be this, but according to Bellarmine's view, theoretically, if a pope could be a heretic, that doesn't even apply here, because he defines a manifest heretic as one who has been warned by the lawful authority twice. That also sidesteps the issue that there is a massive debate on whether or not it would be the College of Cardinals or an imperfect ecumenical council embodying the College of Bishops without its head, thus it's imperfect. It sidesteps that whole discussion that there is no resolution here. There is nothing but a debate on how this would actually happen, because there's no canonical process for how to depose a pope. There's nothing but opinion, which means until a pope actually puts into canon law how to depose a pope, you're not going to have a deposing of a pope. Because if one group says, well, okay, here's what it takes to depose a pope, and then another group of bishops says, no, I don't agree with that, what are you going to have? You're going to have a schism immediately. And how are you going to know who to follow? Some say that it has to be the College of Bishops who does it. Some say, no, it can't be. It has to be this. And some say that. And if there's no actual canonical process, you're going to have nothing but schisms after that. You won't have a settling of the issue. It'll just make it 100 times worse. So any discussion of deposing a pope, in my opinion, is folly until you actually have a pope put into canon law a canonical process for deposing a pope, which we obviously don't have. You have nothing but opinions. And this is just an opinion of Bellarmine. It's not authoritative. It's not binding on anybody's conscience. There are rival opinions to the contrary of Bellarmine, and they're just that, they're opinions. But even then, they don't even get Bellarmine right to begin with. They quote Bellarmine, and yet Bellarmine's not on their side. They quote Bellarmine, and yet if Bellarmine were alive, he would be rebuking them by name and saying, don't you dare use me to defend this dissent and schism. They don't understand him. They abuse him in his quotes. And they don't actually read him in context. They don't know anything about Bellarmine. Bellarmine's not on their side. Bellarmine's on my side, not on theirs. Bellarmine would be agreeing with what I'm saying, not with what they're saying. Let's go to the 26-minute mark and wrap up this video here. Okay, share our screen.
Instead, dear family, let us use the brains God gave us and realize, admit, confess, Jorge Bergoglio is not the Pope, because Jorge Bergoglio is not Catholic. He is a fraud. He is an imposter. He is a viper from hell. So memo to Bergoglio and every American cardinal, save Cardinal Burke. When you die, and it won't be long, and you meet Jesus Christ the Lord, beside him will be standing Saint Tarcisius, Saint Charles Luango, and Saint Robert Bellarmine, and they will block the entrance to heaven and watch you fall to your eternal damnation into the unquenchable fires of hell. That's how Jesus described it.
That's a pretty grandiose claim to make about people when one doesn't even actually know what Bellarmine believed and said. Again, house built on sand. Empty rhetoric. I think this is very dangerous stuff, but it has the ability to sound persuasive to a lot of people, unfortunately. In fact, please pray for the people who watch this video, because when I look through the comment section, every single person in there, not one person disagreed. Every single person cheered him on, and they're tickling his ears, telling him exactly what he wants to hear, praising him every step of the way for everything that we've just seen and much more. Please pray for them, because they are victims in the exact same way that the people who listened to Luther were victims in many ways. He was a very persuasive speaker, very persuasive individual, very charismatic. And a lot of people fell victim and prey to his positions and his teachings. That's it for that video, but I do want to show you something else here. I'll pull it up on my screen in case you have not seen this already. You might not be familiar. Let me go to the appropriate timestamp before I share my screen. I did a video where I reviewed another set of comments of Father Altman about Pope Francis, but I think that a lot of people haven't seen it and are not aware. So since I have you here, I think we need to keep this in mind. The Father Altman that we just witnessed is the same Father Altman who just very recently noted these things as well. I'll share my screen. And let's listen to him directly from the horse's mouth.
I don't give a damn about Jorge Bergoglio, Cardinal Supich, Cardinal McElroy, and all these other loser cardinals in the United States who did not stand up for Mr. Hauck. Oh, no. They've got nothing to teach any of us. They can't, you know, they can't die off soon enough. God can't smite them soon enough. Every damned one of them who did not stick up for the Catholic Church and the Catholic faithful during this feardemic, you can all burn in hell by your own choosing. And the sooner the better before you lead other souls astray. I'll say it, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it again, and I will not stop saying it. Better you burn in hell now before you, because, you know, different levels of hell, as Dante put it. Because the longer you live and the longer you lead people astray, the deeper you're going to hell. Pathetic excuses of miters is just wow.
Now, when I played this video, I was attacked by the channel that I was showing here in this video, which is one of the channels that props up and supports Father Altman. They attempted to slander me, but I'm just going to continue to point out the issues here. In fact, let me take you to another clip from the same video, which I'll include a link to it in the show notes if you want to watch the whole thing. I'm not going to reproduce the whole video for you here, but I'll show you another key clip, a key moment here from this discussion that was also concerning. So again, if you're praising Father Altman, just be aware of what you're praising. That's my purpose of bringing this to your attention. Just be aware. Let's watch this part.
Upholds the Catholic truth handed down unchanged and unchangeable for 2,000 years, the dogmatic truth of the Catholic Church and the Dalai Lama. And people are afraid to say it. Listen.
I don't want to get too distracted here, but I don't know how we got to the Dalai Lama out of nowhere there. I don't know what's going on with Father Altman and why his words are kind of slurred like this and he's all over the place and incoherent. But that is troubling. But let's continue.
Truth of the Catholic Church and the Dalai Lama. And people are afraid to say it. Listen, there's already an actual schism in the church. It's a de facto schism. Everybody's afraid to talk about it. I'm not.
Okay. Let's also go to this here. Same interview, just skipping just a little bit. This was especially troubling.
Schism in the church. It's a de facto schism. Everybody's afraid to talk about it. I'm not.
I heard Mother Miriam, wonderful lady.
Oh, she's incredible.
She
I'm
said the Pope
next
was
week.
Really. I heard her say the Pope was preaching doctrines of demons. I was like, can you say that?
No. Yes, she can, because he is. Wow. He's evil. Wow. He's from hell. So yeah, you can actually listen. Go ahead, post that. Bring it. Come here, Jorge Bergoglio. We'll have a little interview right here, right now. I'm not afraid of you.
Yeah, that was really weird. Let's go through that one more time here.
In the church, it's a de facto schism. Everybody's afraid to talk about it. I'm not.
I heard Mother Miriam, wonderful lady.
Oh, she's incredible.
She
I'm
said the Pope
next
was
week.
Really. I heard her say the Pope was preaching doctrines of demons. I was like, can you say that?
No. Yes, she can, because he is. Wow. He's evil. Wow. He's from hell. So yeah, you can actually listen. Go ahead, post that. Bring it. Come here, Jorge Bergoglio. We'll have a little interview right here, right now. I'm not afraid of you.
And then he just moves on with the interview as if nothing just happened. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. You can go and watch it. It's very, very concerning. I also did another video refutation where a lot of the same arguments that Altman has presented in the video that I reviewed today were presented not long ago, where I responded to it and addressed them point by point. I'll put those that also in the show notes that you're welcome to go and watch. Something's going on here. Something's going on here. Know what you're backing with eyes wide open. Something is going on here. And this is very concerning. But I think we're backing the wrong horse. And over, we continue to do this. We continue to latch on to people and voices who seem to say what we, you know, want them to say. And they tend to set themselves in opposition to the Holy See, and it works bad. You know, it works out in a very bad way each time. It plays out very badly. It never works out well. We always end up backing the wrong horse. And that's certainly what happens also historically. Many, many people have always backed these very charismatic voices in opposition to the papacy. And then every time they end up a schism. And every time they then end up inventing a new heresy and have some schismatic communion that rivals the Catholic Church. And then that schism lasts hundreds and if not now thousands of years. And so it's incredibly disturbing to see. Let me just end with this and say, we don't need another Martin Luther. That's not what we need. There are real problems in the church. There is a real crisis, and there are real things that we can point to and criticize and critique respectfully. I get that. There are real bishops that we can be concerned about and critique respectfully. I've done that here on this channel. I don't have an issue with that. I just want to make sure people have their facts straight. Number one, they do so respectfully. Number two, but we don't need another Martin Luther. What we need is another Padre Pio. And unfortunately, all of these individuals, all these figures, they're not giving us Padre Pio, somebody who suffered false accusations and was vindicated and showed his allegiance to the Holy See, showed his allegiance to a bishop who in and of himself didn't deserve anything. But because of the office, according to Aquinas, one still submits to them. Padre Pio did that and he was vindicated. But Luther, when he set himself in opposition to the papacy and the College of Bishops, he was obviously not vindicated. He was excommunicated. He was condemned as a heretic. And his problems and the rebellion that he initiated lasts unto this day and has misled millions of people to this day. We don't need another Martin Luther. We already have one. We don't need another one. We are still dealing with the problems of the first one. We don't need a second. And that's on top of the issues that we have with other schisms, such as with the Eastern Orthodox and Oriental Orthodox. We already have divisions. We're trying to heal those. We don't need another. I hope this was helpful. If it was, hit the like button and hit the subscribe button. Like I said, I know I'm going to lose subscribers for this. I do every single day. For every video that I do, telling people a message that they don't want to hear, I know I lose subscribers. And you know what? It would be easy for me to just keep my mouth shut and not say anything and just talk about something else because this is my livelihood. It would be very easy for me to just look the other way. Let me not say anything like a lot of people are doing. It would be very easy for me to do that. But I believe it's the right thing to do and that people need help and they need some guidance here. And so I come here on YouTube and I offer that for you. And I know I'm going to take a hit for it. I have been, and I'm going to continue to. But that's okay, because number one, it's not about money, channel, livelihood. I mean, if I have to go and work a secular job, I'm going to go back and work a secular job. I'll provide for my family if that's what I have to do. If I'm not going to do theology or apologetics, I'll provide for my family. But if you feel that it is valuable for me to provide for my family in a way that I can effectively communicate with people about theology, if you feel that that's helpful and you don't want me to just shut down shop and do something else, because there's plenty of other things I could be doing. Okay. Show me that support. Let me see that support. I would greatly appreciate it. Number one, with your prayers. I need it. Another way, help the algorithm reach more people. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, comment, stuff like that. That helps the algorithm reach new people and brings this message to people that need to hear it. So if you felt like this is a message people need to hear, okay, do your part. I've done mine. Do your part. And if you can support me financially, I greatly appreciate that. My family greatly appreciates that. There's a couple ways you could do it. Patreon.com reasonandtheology. You'll get access to extra content as well. And, you know, you'll be supporting what I'm doing. Also, there's a GoFundMe that I'm going to be putting in the show notes, GoFundMe link that will be there within just a few minutes. And you could certainly consider supporting me that way as well. Lastly, I do have a book for you. It's a free ebook. You don't have to purchase anything. It is free for you. And it directly relates to a lot of the problems that we have in the Catholic Church, the crisis. I address many factors, many problems that we see, but then I also give a healthy response on how to respond to them, especially from Scripture. If you want to check this out, if you want a free copy of it, a PDF, go to reasonandtheology.com. And when you do so, you'll see a pop-up of the book. And I ask that you just simply click on it. You put in your email and you'll get a copy of it right then and there. It's called Church Chaos. You can't miss it. So reasonandtheology.com. All right, y'all. That's going to do it. Let me know what your comments are in the comment section, what you thought about this. We'll see you later. God bless. Hey, everybody. Just wanted to tell you about my new free ebook, Church Chaos, Biblical Insights for Confused Catholics. If you are a confused Catholic and you're thinking about leaving the Catholic Church, or you're thinking about converting to the church, but you see that there's a crisis in the church and you're just unsure, this is the book for you. Again, it is free. Just simply go to reasonandtheology.com. You'll see a pop-up that comes up on your screen. Just simply click on it and you'll put in your email and it will provide you the free PDF ebook right then and there. Please check it out if you're confused about the situation in the Catholic Church today. ReasonandTheology.com. Are you confused about how Catholic teaching authority works? With encyclicals, papal bulls, councils, and many other things, it's easy to get confused on what is authoritative and what is not. Fortunately, at MaximusInstitute.com, I have prepared a course explaining the Magisterium from A to Z. Visit the website and check out the course Understanding the Magisterium for more information.
If you're looking to buy or sell a home, office, or any kind of property anywhere in the world, you're going to want to call Real Estate for Life, and they're going to connect you with a Catholic agent. Now, that agent will donate a portion of their commission upon sale, and Real Estate for Life will donate 75% of that gift to a pro-life organization at no cost to you. Call Real Estate for Life at 1-877-LIFE-US1 or text them 248-431-1440. If you care about the pro-life cause, call them now.
Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit the like button and the subscribe button. See you next time. God bless.